I'm Anna Sale, in for Leonard Lopate today. Isabella Rossellini has been celebrated for her memorable performances in films like Blue Velvet, Death Becomes Her, and Fearless. In recent years, she's taken on another film role that's a little different. She's the creator and star of the short film series Green Porno, in which she looks at the mating and child-rearing practices of insects, birds, fish, and animals. She's followed that up with Seduce Me, about seduction in nature, and Mamas, about parenting in nature. They feature Miss Rossellini narrating what happens one species at a time, usually in the first person, usually with deadpan delivery, while she acts it all out in fantastic puppet-like costumes.
If I were a bee, a queen bee, I would be very fat and do nothing else but lay eggs. The unfertilized eggs will hatch my sons. The fertilized eggs will hatch my daughters.
These were shown on the Sundance Channel and were also the basis for a book. Now she's turned it into a one-woman show, which she will be performing at the Brooklyn Academy of Music's Fisher Theater starting tomorrow, running through January 25th. I'm delighted that it has brought Miss Rossellini back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Welcome.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here.
So first, this is a one-woman show about sex and nature.
Yes.
How do you manage to play all the characters?
I don't play the characters. It's like a conference. I have a podium and I'm talking. This podium transforms, it's a little crazier than a regular podium. It can be transformed into a little theater where I do puppet theater. But I also have a screen behind me where I show some of my films or some of the photos. So it's very colorful, it's very animated. But in fact, I'm not wearing the costumes. I don't have to leave the stage and come back with these different costumes that I've made representing the different animals.
How did the idea for Green Porno come to you to begin with? Why sex in nature?
Well, sex because people are interested in sex. I have been always interested in nature. And in fact, I went back recently to university and I'm following at Hunter College a master degree in etology, animal behavior and conservation. Uh-huh. And so that was also the base of my scripts. The monologue came about because my friend actress Carole Bouquet, who's a French actress, came up with the idea, the concept. She said, you should do a scientific conference, but it's a comical one, and it's based on your knowledge and the films you've done. And I said, I can't write. I only write 2 minutes film. I wrote 40 of them, but it's still 2 minutes. I don't know how to stretch it to an hour and a half. And she called Jean-Claude Carrière, who's a very established 80-year-old writer that works with Peter Brooks, that worked with Louis Bournuel, and he loved my films. And so Jean-Claude and I wrote the monologue that I'm presenting at BAM.
Where did your interest in animal behavior come from?
Do you know, I think I was born with it. Since I was a little girl, I always liked animals. I always had dogs and cats. I can't imagine my life without them. It's, you know, even when I travel and I don't have my pets with me, I miss them. But beyond that, I really always, you know, lifted stone to see what kind of animals were underneath the stone and being fascinated with animals. So I was born with it. And I, throughout my life, it was a hobby. I really always wanted to study. But see, I grew up in Italy and in the 70s, where it was my time to go to university, there were very traditional studies on animal. There was veterinary school. Mm-hmm. There were husbandry for, farming. But there weren't etology. This is a kind of a new science that developed during those years. So I became aware of it because of the work of Jane Goodall and other people like her. But it wasn't really available at the university yet. And now it is because of conservation. So that's why I went back and studied what I've always wanted to study.
So walk me through how you learned about particular species and their behavior, like the earthworm, for example, trying to figure out what parts of the body did what. You'd explain it beautifully in your video, mm-hmm. but it's broken down so simply. But I imagine it started with a much more kind of academic conversation, an academic
text. Of
course.
I mean, that is the biggest. I spend most of my time, months, writing, translating what is written with a very dry and not funny language into something that it is funny but also accessible. I don't know why science, when they write their article, when they write for their scientific publication, there is a culture that makes them excludes people that are not scientists. And I don't know if it is in the attempt to be very precise or in the attempt to be elitist and just talk among scientists. Whatever it is, a lot of people are cut out. For example, the sexuality of animals, we've studied at school, but I don't remember anywhere understanding any of it. In fact, I always understood that all animals, more or less, they're a couple like us, a male and a female. That's a very rare combination. Most of the time, animals are not in a couple. They have many husbands, many wives, or they are even hermaphrodites. They are at once male and female. Anything happens. And yet we studied that at school, but none of it sticked in my brain. It sticked in my brain when I read about this, when people like Jane Goodall, Ian Douglas Hamilton, all the people that wrote popular books, mm-hmm. and that were fascinating. And yet what I learned at school, it was boring. The biggest step for me was really to change the scientific language and make it accessible and then find funny costume and funny ways to explain it. And see, people seem to like it a lot.
So you mentioned it's not a lot of just monogamous couples running around out there in the animal kingdom. What are some of your favorite examples of some amazing things happening that
well, you know, I mean, when I started the first series, I really tried to do animals that were very common, that we all knew. The earthworm. The earthworm is an hermaphrodite. So he can mate with another hermaphrodite, but they both have the role of male and the female. Or if there's nobody around, he does it all by itself and can reproduce by itself. But the great advantage of having different sex is that you can mix genes. And that creates the singularity of each individual. You and I, we both have two eyes, one nose, and one mouth, but we're slightly different. And that is a great advantage, because if a bacteria comes, there will be, because of our individual difference, some of us will be resistant, and it wouldn't be exterminating our old series, our old species. That's why sexual reproduction has become so popular, because there are some animals that reproduced asexually. They reproduce by multiplying themselves a lot, because they can be killed so easily by one bacteria because they are all the same. To me, this is what is so incredible, that there are so many ways to reproduce. You know, bees, as you mentioned, I find it fascinating that they mate one day in their life, or maybe a couple of days of their life, and they store all the sperms and they use it throughout their life to have their babies. But the female, they have a father. But the male, they come out without sperm, that she would make them with her unfertilized eggs. How fascinating is that?
You wrote most of this play, as I understand it, the monologue, while you were recovering from spinal surgery.
Yes.
For your lifelong scoliosis.
Yes.
As you're grappling with sort of these questions of survival and how different species have worked it out and the different things they've come up with, I mean, just talk about that a little bit. What did you learn about adaptability?
Well, there is one thing that I don't know. I'm going to try to say it. Let's see if it can be cleared. Throughout art, because, of course, I come from the art world, we all talked about the perfection of beauty, the perfect dimension to get perfection. But when you look at nature, perfection is not what counts. What counts is diversity. It's the biodiversity that guarantees the survival of species in the earth. Because perfection, if you reach perfection, but then the condition of the world around you changes, you're not perfect anymore. You cannot fit. So the diversity among individuals, the fact that we're singular, allows the individual to reproduce more and get fitted to the new situation that the planet is having. Especially now, it's essential because we're going through a period where our planet is having enormous changes with climate change and pollution. So the more diversity there is, the more we can adapt to these new conditions.
You also look at pleasure with Seduce Me, the series about seduction. So we were just talking about survival, but what did you learn about pleasure?
Well, we don't know. You know, it's a big question about animals. Do they feel pleasure? Do they feel? Do they have feeling? Do they have thinking like us? According to Darwin, and it still seems the most convincing, he says that he thinks that there is a degree of which, that since we are all connected, that there are degrees of intelligence and maybe different intelligence, but it's hard to imagine that we are the only one capable of feeling or capable of thinking. So, you know, as if you look at the bones in a hand, it's the same bone that you find in the fin of a fish or in the wing of a bird. So why would it be this continuity in the skeleton, but it wouldn't be this continuity in the brain, in the intelligence, in the feelings? But yet we don't know it. When I did the series about seduction, it was because, first of all, animals, they have to have sex. So they are not asexual animals, because this sexual animal, they don't have to seduce anybody, mm-hmm. poor thing. But as soon as they have a sex, they have to enchant the other individual to convince them to be, for example, penetrated. And the technique of seduction are numerous. Some animals sing, some animals dance, they parade. They some animals, like spider, they bring presents to the females. The males show off. The female is very important because she is also selecting. You know, generally we imagine female to be very passive and being selected by the strongest male. Apparently they play a very dominant role in sexual selection.
You also found a lot of not just heterosexual interactions in nature.
Yes, this is the most incredible, you know, I mean, we have recognized in for human being that homosexuality is accepted, and in fact, more and more states in the United States and countries all over the world are passing laws to have gay marriage. But in the old-fashioned way, they looked at sexuality and gay sexuality as being against nature. But now we've seen with animals that there is a lot of homosexual couples. You know, there's geese, Canadian geese, that sometimes two females, they might create a couple. Most birds, they raise their babies. I say babies. See, the scientists will not use babies, uh-huh. but I do. So Canadian geese, they were, like a lot of birds, they raise babies, couples. And sometimes a couple is not a male and a female, but it can be two females. Of course, one of the female for one night had an affair, but then the raising of the baby uh-huh. is done with a companion. So I think that now we look at sexuality, we gave the act of sexuality or the act of being together in a couple, we have seen it too restrictively. We have seen it was for reproduction. Well, we know that the act of sexuality has other roles. It creates bonding, it creates families, as it is for us. It is probably true for animals, too.
I'm speaking with Isabella Rossellini about her series Green Porno, which is coming to the Brooklyn Academy of Music starting tomorrow on stage in a one-woman show. I want to talk a bit about the style that you came up with for Green Porno. If you've not seen the web videos, they're just fantastic colors, amazing costumes, and very funny. So how did you come up with exactly how you were going to explain how deer reproduce in 2 minutes and what you wanted it to look like?
Well, I think it boils down to being a model. For many years, I worked in fashion. I acquired a knowledge of making fantastic costume. I also worked with incredible art designers, Rick Gilbert and Andy Byers. But the basic concept of the costume comes from me. And I think it's my experience in fashion that gave me this freedom of inventing these beautiful, beautiful costumes. Advertisement taught me how to tell a story in 30 seconds or uh-huh. 1 minute. You have to be very precise, very essential. Every word counts. And you are always delivering a new message. So my little films are quite dense of information. And of course, I am an actress, so I played all the roles because I knew, and the inspiration was a little bit the silent movie. Buster Keaton, because of dead, his dead is so deadpan, and I thought it worked very well in my absurd films. uh-huh. So it was a combination of all my life experience in films, in fashion, and my love for animal and my interest in biology that boils down into creating green porno.
And who did you want to see it? Like, what were you thinking about in terms of audience?
You know, I mean, I always worked, we work with the Sundance Channel that, you know, has a budget for experimental film. The Sundance Channel Festival Institute is all about independent film, new artists. So there is never a marketing research that says, you know, our audience is this target, let's say, let's see what they like. So you do something and then you find your audience when you do experimental filmmaking. And I think that I actually acquired a lot of younger people because my work as a model has been the most known, especially I've been for many years the spokesperson for a cosmetic Lancôme Lancôme, and still a lot of people think of me as the Lancôme spokesperson. And these are women between 40s and 60s, 70s. But actually my films have been seen by much younger people. Mm-hmm. So I have a whole new audience, and they don't even know about my jobs before that.
Did you come up with the name Green Porno?
Yes. Then we tried to change it because we couldn't find a sponsor. They didn't want to name porno. And then we changed it into Seduce Me, Mamas, Bestiary of Love. But the sponsor didn't come. So we and everybody refers them to Green Porno. So we gave up and we continue calling it Green Porno. They were the Sundance Channel was making so many television programs about green homes and green transportation. And I said, well, you don't have green porno. I'll make porno for you. And that's how it came about.
I love that. Has it changed how you thought about gender playing all these roles?
No, but yes, in a way it was liberating to think that, for example, animal, there is homosexuality, or that things in nature are very varied. They're not so fixed as our culture wants it to be. There are certain fish that change sex. How about that? There is a little animal called the Crepidula furnicata that is a crustacean and lives against the rocks. And it is the position that this animal has in society that determines the sex. So the first animal that is attached to the rock is the female, and all the other on top of her are the male. And they're always in this copulating position. That's why they're called fornicata, Crepidula fornicata. But when the female dies, she's the oldest. When she dies, the first male next to her transforms itself, becoming the new female. And this happens with a lot of animals. They change sex as they mature. Most of the time they're male, and as they grow, they become female because there's more room for eggs. But also vice versa. But we don't have a name to describe the Crepidula when he's not a male anymore and he's not yet a female, because our language reflects our categories that are so rigid, male and female.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Interesting. So this is the BAM performance. You sit at a podium and
yes.
And where does it start and where does it end? What's the tour that we take?
The tour that we take is because it is a an hour and a half, no, an hour 15 minutes instead of 2 minutes film. In the 2 minutes film, I say, if I were a fly, I would have wings, I would have these eyes, I would have these paws, so I can transform myself in this kind of origami costume, and I would mate that way. That's the only thing I said. Now I can explain more. So we can go from asexual animal to hermaphrodite, to sequential hermaphrodite, animal that changed sex, to individual that have male and female and all the variation within male and female, which is not only heterosexual, but they can be transvestite, they can be homosexual. There are certain animals that, like the cuttlefish, that there is a dominant male that controls a harem. So the younger male, the one that are flimsier, they transform themselves and make themselves look like the female to sneak in the harem and make love to the female. They're called the sneaky males. And now we have DNA tests, and we can prove that some of the sneaky males are the father of a lot of the babies of the cuttlefish and
the
other
sneaky
animals.
Sneaky males. I've been speaking with Isabella Rossellini. Her one-woman show is Green Porno, live on stage. It debuts tomorrow at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Ticket information is available on our show page at wnyc.org. Isabella, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.